Clear prop.
Star 73, Cherokee number 2, following Flynn traffic, 3 mile final. Clear subject. 1 Charlie Bravo, Lakeshore runway 25, going 4 mile final.
This is Behind the Prop with United Flight Systems owner and licensed pilot Bobby Doss, and its co-host, Major Airline Captain and designated pilot examiner Wally Mulhern. Now let's go Behind the Prop.
What's up, Wally?
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
Fantastic as always. Just got back from a Vision Jet trip. Listeners, don't get too frustrated with me talking about all the time. I'm on cloud nine with all this flying. Wally had some things we were talking about yesterday, and we are going to record a show tonight and share it with the world about commercial mindset. And it's something that I thought I had as a commercial rated pilot. I thought like a commercial pilot. I have good examples. I shared some of them. But in day in, day out flying in a jet to bigger airports, the mindset for me has changed. Wally, you're a pro. You do it all the time. You do it every day. There's been a ton of bad in the news lately. Yesterday, we were talking, and almost in real time, there was a runway incursion at Chicago Midway, which you just your jaw hits the floor, and you're like, how does this happen? How many people could have got hurt? And you said, why don't we record a show on commercial mindset? And here we are. What were your thoughts as we put this thought plan together to record the show and share with our listeners what a mindset is of a commercial pilot?
Well, I think what we have, you know, by definition, commercial pilot, you can be paid to fly. Okay, so it is your job. And I think we have to think of that. You're being dependent on the operation. You're being paid to, let's say a corporate situation. You're being paid to fly people from one airport place to another. And at the end of the day, that's what you're being paid for. You know, Tom Brady was paid to manage football games and win games. And that's what a professional athlete is being paid for. So at the end of the day, canceling is not always maybe the best answer. Now, you've got to be able to stand on your own 2 feet and say, no, we can't go today because of this and this and this. But I think we have to try to be, my first aviation boss, a guy named Eric Mingledorf, if he happens to listen to this, helped me get my career going. And he used to always say, we need to be mission oriented. And we actually used that phrase in one of our podcasts a long time ago. We talked about mission oriented time building. But, we need to, the bottom line is we want to complete the mission. We want to, an operative word being complete. Okay. So, that doesn't mean just go up and fly in a very unsafe situation. But maybe mission-oriented to a commercial pilot is a little bit different than to a non-commercial pilot. I give scenarios on all my private and commercial check rides. And, a lot of times on the private, the applicant will say, well, and I'll give them an overweight situation. I say, okay, you get to the airport and I bring my a friend or an animal or something with me and we're overweight. And I ask them, well, what can we do? And probably 70% of my private applicants will say, oh, we can't go. And they're not thinking, well, gee, we're going to land at that airport with 23 gallons worth of fuel and we're only 18 pounds overweight. We could take 3 gallons off and land up there with 20 gallons instead of 23 gallons. And that's still within my personal minimums. Sometimes with a private, I have to kind of twist their arm into taking the flight like that or making that decision. I don't feel like I should have to do any arm twisting with my commercials. I think a commercial applicant should be able to, I won't say troubleshoot, but yeah, maybe that's a good word, troubleshoot the situation and kind of come up with some potential solutions. You know, okay, maybe a, you know, they always start out by, no, he can't go. Okay, well, we can get rid of some bags. Well, no, I need my underwear to go with me.
Man, Wally, you just made everybody that listens to our show become disappointed, because I have a feeling that the millions of listeners thought you went commando. Like, no underwear ever.
No. Man, not me.
Disappointment, man, all around the world. Well, yeah, you want to take your bags. You want to take your dog. That's not the right solution. And you said it, but I was going to ask, like, what's the varying difference you expect from a private student or applicant compared to a commercial applicant? I mean, I think there is a difference in that mindset. I think what I've seen lately is the approach that the pilots around me, I'm the rookie here, I'm the learner still, I'm in SOE flight time right now. The way that they watch the weather, the way they're looking at their phones for weather updates and flight planning updates and routes that have been flown and turbulence and winds aloft, like, we talk about it all the time in the flight school kind of world and training world, but it's not real world. And to see it in real time and to think about it differently, my mindset has changed. And I think the speed expectation, yes, it's a jet, but it's a small jet. There's prop planes that go faster than the Vision jet. It's the mindset that you're going to go as fast as you really can at these busy airports, as far as you really can, and then manage the energy. That's not, you can't even simulate that, I don't think, in a Cessna or a Warrior in the training world, right?
Right, absolutely.
There's definitely a different mindset because of that, and I think that's what we're going to continue to dive into today. For me, the interesting go, no-go type decisions or thought processes that I've been approached with has really been more about instrument flying. It is a different mindset. We took off Monday. We were going to take off Monday, and the visibility was really, really low. Like, no way you would ever take off in that in a piston plane. And it was, I think it was 200 feet was the ceiling, and it was 1 mile visibility. And the guy that I was flying with was like, I said, this would be below my personal minimums. I probably wouldn't go. He goes, oh, I would go. I wouldn't be the least bit worried in the Citation because I got two engines. And in the Vision jet, I'm really not worried either at 200 and a mile visibility. And I was like, wow. And I'm thinking, issue, how am I going to get back? What am I going to do? And he's like, look, at 200 a mile, Intercontinental, our big airport in Houston, is like 6 minutes from here. I'm going to be able to land there because they have those minimums. I can't come back to this airport, but I can go to that airport, and I feel pretty confident that my safety envelope is there. And we saw somebody take off, and I was like, wow, okay, I see they took off. I could see him. That's interesting. And he goes, check the weather again, and it was 200 and a quarter mile. And I was like, that's a different ball game. And he goes, yeah, I would not go anymore. And I was intrigued because what's really the difference in 200 and a mile and 200 and a quarter mile? Obviously, how far you can see. And he goes, those are beyond the minimums at Intercontinental. You can't land there. You can't land here. You can't go really anywhere with a quarter mile visibility. And that changes the ball game because then I'm trapped. I'm kind of stuck. I got to go somewhere else really far away. And at that point in Houston, it was pink for miles in both directions. Like, you weren't going to go, you weren't going to find an airport where you could land for a long, long way. And I just don't think I think like that. I'm that private student that says, oh, it's cloudy, it's below 1,000, I'm not going to go. And I think the first thing he said to me was, well, I got a meeting, Bobby. We got to get to the meeting. Like, what are we going to do? And I think that's the way commercial pilots are probably engaging with their managers, leaders, whoever's the owner of that aircraft. They're going to take them and say, let's go.
Yeah, but you do have to, you know, at some point be able to put your foot down and say, no, I can't go. But that's finding that line. You know, I'll do something with my applicants one time. As they're telling me we can't take this trip, I'll say, hold on just a second, and it's a little comedy relief, I'll pick up my phone and I'll pretend that I'm calling my airline. And I'll say, hey, my flight to Honolulu on day after tomorrow, I don't want to take off at max takeoff weight, so call up 50 people and tell them they can't go on their dream vacation. And then I jokingly say, oh, okay, you want to transfer me to human resources? Okay. And I pretend I'm talking to human resources, and of course on the phone I get fired. And you know, I that's what I say to the commercial pilots. I say, this is your job. This is your job to move this airplane and people. You know, a lot of times applicants will tell me, well, I'm not comfortable taking off at 2,550 pounds in an Archer, which is max takeoff weight. And I say, and you want to be a commercial pilot and you're not comfortable taking off at 2,550 pounds. And a lot of times the response I get is, well, I've never done it. And go, well, then shame on you and shame on your CFI. You know,
amen.
You ought to know what it's like. You know, you don't, if you're going to give your kid the keys to the car to drive from point A to point B, and they're not comfortable driving, 65 on the interstate, and they're going to go on the interstate, well, then they're a hazard. So, you know. So
good point. You know, speaking of the fine line, and you got to make some tough calls. I was watching a YouTube video this week, came up on my reels or something on my phone, I'm sure, and it was an air traffic controller. I'll try and find the video and put in the show notes, but it was an air traffic controller who was working on 9/11, and he was working the Fort Worth sector. And he said that his manager came up to him and said, I don't really know what's going on. Something's happened, and we need to get every aircraft on the ground as fast as we can. And he thought it was a joke. He thought it was a drill. He said, I ain't got time for this drill. And they're like, no, it's not a drill. Long story short, he starts working everybody back on the ground, and he's working everybody to Lubbock and back to Dallas. And he said, there's one jet going to Vegas. And the pilot says, my boss says, we're going to Vegas. And the air traffic controller says, look, this isn't your boss's decision anymore. I'm told to get everybody on the ground. We got to get them on the ground. I need you to follow my instructions and go to Lubbock. The guy says, look, my boss says we're going to Vegas. I'm going to Vegas. And the guy's laughing. This is a funny video, ultimately. And he's like, look, I've talked to my manager. You have one more chance to listen to my instructions, or you have to understand that you're going to have company really, really quick. And he's like, I'm going to Vegas. And he said, I hit a button and two F-16s were on his wingtips about 2 minutes later. And he called back and says, I think I've changed my mind. I want to go to Lubbock. And he says, sorry, that's not an option anymore. You need to continue towards Phoenix. You're going to land in Phoenix. And they were on the tarmac for like 3 hours at 120 degrees temperature. And it was a very bad situation. I don't think they got out of jail that day. And sometimes you got to tell your boss, like, hey, you don't know what the real rules are here. We need to comply and not go to Vegas today. Right. I can imagine the pressure that a young pilot might have felt in that situation. And, of course, you don't know what's happening in New York on that day, but there's times where you say, no, I'm not going. I've heard every crazy story from a door CAS message that the boss was like, hey, it's just a erroneous message. We need to go. How do you know it's an erroneous message? Like, you just got to be pilot in command and say, we're not going.
Right.
No chances. In your world, what are some other instrument or approach type things? You know, the speed, the flying to minimums, the not just picking another airport to go practice at is something that I think I've been introduced to right lately. That's kind of new to me. What do you think we talk about it. Do you expect a commercial pilot that comes to do a check ride with you, Wally, to be instrument current and proficient?
Absolutely. And I've had people come to me for instrument check rides. And at the end of it, I explained to them that instrument flying is a quickly erodible skill, especially at that level. And you know, you need to keep up with it. But, and I, I know what's going to happen. They're going to go home and they're going to drive back to the flight school tomorrow and they're going to start working on chandelles and lazy eights. And then I'm going to get a call from them about 2 or 3 months or 6 weeks or whatever. And, you know, there are times where, you know, you wake up in the morning and the weather is kind of, wonky or, you know, it's low ceilings or whatever, but, you know, you feel it can burn off, and it's going to burn off. That's the way it's been around here for the last several days. You wake up in the morning and extremely reduced visibility, and by 10 o'clock, it's fine. And I will usually, you know, communicate with the applicant early in the morning, and I'll ask them, I'll say, are you, if needed, are you, comfortable filing IFR for this flight, maybe to get to a, you know, an airport that's 20 miles away or just to get above the clouds to do our maneuvers. And then maybe by the time we come back in, it's fine. And, for the most part, they're pretty good about it. But this one young man that I had several years ago, you know, we to get back into the airport, it was, I want to say it was probably like maybe 1800 overcast. We went out, we were able to do all the maneuvers and to get back into, it was back into hooks. We needed to really fly the approach and, you know, commercial check ride. So this technically really wasn't part of the check ride, but, he really had no idea what he was doing. And we got in and we talked about it. And I said, did you take my advice or did you just come back the next day and start doing chandelles and lazy eights? And he said, that's what he did. And I said, well, it's, you could tell. And I, you know, we had a good, discussion, if you will, you know, talking about being the professional pilot. I said, so now you want to go out tomorrow and start applying for jobs and you're not really, proficient in instrument flying. And I think it was an eye opener for him.
Yeah, no question. I'm sure it would be. And I think what adds to that for me is the fact that I probably let myself get where I wasn't instrument current, and it is an erodible skill. It doesn't come back right away. And to be able to add another level of pressure, whether it be a boss telling you we're going to go or a air traffic controller to say maintain your max forward speed and things are doubling down on you, you got to be really proficient and make sure that you're capable and able to execute what you needed to execute. I think when I did my commercial, I was shocked how hard the sectional stuff was again, the airspace was again, because I hadn't thought about it for so long. But man, now that I'm in the level where that's easy and I've got this speed coming at me, I think the instrument stuff is really overwhelming. On top of that, I'll say automation continues to be a surpriser, right? Commercial pilots will have a lot of automation, and they'll be working as a crew. We were flying day before yesterday. We were in approach mode. Everything should have worked the way it was supposed to work. But you know what? The autopilot didn't turn the airplane. And if we wouldn't have caught it, it could have got to be a nasty situation pretty quick in some busy airspace, you know? You have to be in front of that airplane. You have to know what you're expecting it to do. And when it doesn't do what you thought it was going to do, you better do it for it, right? You are the pilot. And I'm sure you don't experience that stuff in your bigger planes, but I'm sure you maybe have had that in the Saratoga or been on a check ride where things didn't work out. That automation can end up biting you in the butt really, really quick. I think we've probably seen plenty of Air Safety Institute messages or videos about things like that where the automation ended up winning. You got to know what it's supposed to be doing and make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, well, my airline, we have an automation policy, and the automation policy, in a nutshell, says use it to its fullest extent until it starts getting in the way, and then start shedding the automation. There's different levels of shedding, but yeah, you've got to be able to, and this can happen in a a very short period of time. You know, I used to fly the 737 when we started getting the new generation 737s, which is like in the late 1998-99 and around there. And so they were the latest and greatest, and there were a lot of times in the airplane you'd hear someone say, "What's it doing?" You know, and the joke was the other guy would say, "I don't know, but I've seen it before." And really it was like, "What's it doing?" You know, as we learn things, okay, in this mode, it's going to do this if this. Okay, all right, I understand it. Yeah, that's deep down in the book, that's in there. Yeah, I don't see that a whole lot, but occasionally you do. You know, it's a, what's it doing? Well, it's not doing what I want it to do, so let's turn the autopilot off. And our mantra is flight path first, is the flight path of the airplane, lateral and vertical, going the way we want it to go. In other words, do we want to be heading down towards Mother Earth? Yeah, I do. And it's not. Okay, we'll turn the autopilot off and fly the airplane.
Yeah, today, I think I've had a lot of learning moments. And today, the pilot that I'm flying with gave me a learning moment. We were flying from Colorado to Houston. And he said, "Man, what's wrong with the automation? Your plane's not anywhere pointed that it's supposed to be pointed." And I look at the screen, and the plane is literally flying like 50 degrees off course. And I look at the autopilot control panel, everything's set up right. I'm looking, and I'm shocked. I'm like, "Well, we got to turn on the heading bug. We got to turn nav off. Like, I need to fly this plane." So I turned nav mode off, hit heading bug, turned to the heading that it should have been flying on, and we turned to it, and he's like, "Now you're way off course. What's happening?" And I was like, at that point, I didn't know. Guess what the crosswind was for us at 31,000 feet right then, Wally?
Sounds like it was significant.
It was significant. We had a 110-knot crosswind at 31,000 feet. And if you've never experienced that, which many of us in the prop plane training world would not have experienced, the plane correcting for crosswind is looking like 50 degrees left of where it's going. For sure, a vision jet's doing 50 degrees left. Where the plane's going to be indication in the G3000 was off the screen. Like, you couldn't even see where it was pointing to go because the angle of crab was so great. But I thought we were off course. And he's like, "You were perfectly fine. I just wanted to see if you understood what was really happening on the screen." I've seen 10 degrees correction on a G1000 in the 1A2, but I've never seen that much correction. But you need to understand what that's doing and why it's doing what it's doing. The vertical navigation is something that's still probably not my forte, and I'm learning it. But you need to know, if you want to go down, why isn't the plane going down? As you said, it can catch you, and it doesn't take more than about a minute of doing the wrong thing for you to be really out of whack and not complying with what ATC thinks you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And as we saw, missing, you know, by flight rules, we fly around or above or below a Southwest jet today at about 1,000 feet. You don't want to be too far off course at about 1,000 knot close speed, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about check rides and just flying that you see where people can't really troubleshoot something and decide to throw in the towel? I'll feed you a little hint, like mag checks, like mag check fails. We just going to cancel.
Yeah. I see that a lot. And we talk about this in the ground portion. You know, I've got to cover three systems, and, I'll just throw it out there, for anybody that may take a check ride with me. We're going to talk about the engine as one system. We're going to talk about the electrical system as the other system. And then the other one, I'm just going to, you know, pick something. But, I mean, I think those are the big ones. You know, I give a scenario of we go do our run-up. And on one magneto, the engine is running extremely rough. What are we going to do? And I'd say for privates, a good 55% of the people, and these are just informal numbers, but I think more than half say, well, I'm gonna go back. I'm going to taxi back. And I say, okay, we taxi back, now what? Well, I'm going to have maintenance look at it. Okay, well, it's whatever the day of the week it is. Maintenance isn't around. There's no maintenance today. We can't go. There's something wrong with the airplane. I go, well, yeah, there's something wrong with the airplane, but it's like getting in your car and the windshield is dirty. You know, is there something wrong with the car? Yeah, you could make the argument something's wrong with the car. The windshield's dirty. Can we clean the windshield? Yeah. Go, well, then, you know. So, you know, that's one that I give. And I get little more upset with my commercials who get out there and I mean, is that the wrong answer? I can't say it's a wrong answer. Is it the best answer? I mean, do we have something that we can do?
Can't we clean the mags, Wally? Can't we clean the mags?
Yeah, well, if you go to AutoZone, you go into the there's mag clean. No, yeah, we're not. A lot of people will say that. Yeah, well, we have a mag cleaning procedure. I go, oh, really? Well, show it to me, and they'll pull it out, and I'll say, how come it says spark plug cleaning procedure? It doesn't say mag cleaning procedure. So I joke. I tell people that, hey, if I ever get to be king of the world, I'm gonna make two changes right away. The first change is that the term ATM machine is gonna be banned, because ATM machine is like saying automatic teller machine. But the other one is we're gonna quit calling it a mag check, and we're gonna call it that check that we do is gonna be called the ignition system check. Because you're really checking the whole ignition system. You're checking a whole lot more than mags. I mean, you would think that when you do the mag check and things don't go well, you would think that you've got a mag problem. And that's really not the case.
What about troubleshooting starting? And your expectations as a DPE private to commercial. So let's say this is the third block of the day where you're doing an afternoon check ride, student, private or commercial, gets in the aircraft. It's been flown 4 hours previous to this point, and it's fuel injected, and the applicant just cannot get the plane started. What are your expectations?
Well, you know, my expectations is that we would try something different. You know, the old adage, the definition of insanity, trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And you know, we see a lot of people doing that, and you know, that's a situation where, they've probably never seen this. They've never dealt with a hot start or anything like that, or a flooded engine, whatever the case may be. But, you know, that's something that, for the flight instructors, if you are in a situation like that, where you are having to do a flooded start procedure or a hot start, I mean, that is golden opportunity to really teach. You know, somebody sees something, talking about it in theory, are two entirely different things. I will say this, however, most of the airplanes will have procedures for those. And it's kind of crazy if you actually follow the procedure. Most of the time, vast majority of the time, it works.
No doubt. And this time of year in Houston's tough because we don't have too much cold weather, but we've had, you know, 30 degrees, 25 when we wake up. It's hard to start a piston plane. And I've had a bunch of phone calls. And the funny thing is, you know, we in the summertime, hot engines, which is the majority of what we do, we talk a lot about not over-priming, Wally. Don't over-prime. And I think a commercial pilot should know that the POH has a bunch of really good information in it, and that if you go and explore it, that it's probably going to point you in the right direction. Well, in the wintertime, the POH for a cold start probably says prime it a bunch. I happen to know that a Cessna says up to 8 times. If you pumped 8 pumps in the summertime in a Cessna, it ain't going to start. But in the wintertime, it's probably going to start. And a lot of times I hear students say, man, my instructor said never put it, pump that primer more than twice. Your instructor's not the POH. And there's probably a reason why the POH says eight times.
Yeah. Yeah. Another POH scenario that I will give is we're going from our departure airport to our destination, and we get about two thirds of the way there, and both of us just have to really use the restroom. So we end up diverting, and this gives me the opportunity to ask the applicant about an airport that he or she was not prepared for. Okay, you know, tell me the runway lengths and, you know, does it have services and all that kind of stuff. So we'll go through all that. And so we go to the airport and we go in, we use the restroom. While we're there, we decide to get fuel, and then we go in, and the person working at the FBO says, hey, we got a really good barbecue place down the street. You guys want to go grab some lunch? So we take them up on it, and we go. We come back an hour later. We get in the airplane, and you look down and realize, oh, my gosh, I left the master switch on. And it probably wouldn't happen this way, but we'll say that we have a totally dead battery. You know, what are we going to do? And by and large, most people say, well, but usually what they'll say is, well, we're going to have to get a new battery, or we're going to have to charge it. And I say, well, okay, yeah, the charger's on another airplane. That one's going to be done charging in 4 hours, and we can put it on this one then. So you're going to be delayed significantly. And, you know, we get into most airplanes do have a procedure for starting the engine using external power. And, you know, we get in, we talk about the procedure of doing that. And it's different on different type airplanes, obviously. On a Piper, for instance, I'm not 100% sure about the newer Pipers, but I know the older Pipers, if you start using external power, you actually start the airplane with the master switch off, which seems a little weird, but that's the procedure, and it works. Trust me, it works. I've done it. A Cessna, usually the master switch is on, but it is important that you plug the power in before you turn the master switch on. I don't know if you guys remember the scene in Apollo 13 where they had to come up with a procedure to power up the LEM to get it back to Earth, and they had a limited amount of electricity. And so the guys on the ground came up with this complex procedure, and they were telling the guys in the lunar module that they needed to follow this procedure exact, because when you deal with electricity, you're opening and closing relays, and sometimes, you know, turning the master switch on and then plugging it in, a relay that needs to be closed won't be closed. So you got to plug the power on in and then turn the master switch on. So it's just a matter of following the checklist.
No question. And that leads me to my last question. Whether you're a private, commercial, you have a commercial mindset or not, when there's an issue, what is the first thing you should think about doing, Wally?
Fixing it.
But what would I refer to with the steps to fix it?
Oh, POH. POH.
Which is going to have a checklist. Yeah. So when in doubt, I recently took that Vision Jet check ride, and every time he told me there was a problem, he says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to refer to the checklist. And I got them all right because I said the right words, but I didn't know what to do in some of those cases. But you have the POH, well, you have a list of instructions.
Well, I'm gonna quote my college band director, Jack White, may his soul rest in peace, a sweetheart of a man. And Jack White had many, many really kind of funny quotes. And this is, we called them Jackisms. But this is a Jackism, and this referred to marching band. We everything that we played on the field had to be memorized. We weren't allowed to use music for anything. But when we would be in rehearsal, and he would always say, "When in doubt, whip it out."
There you go.
You could say that for the POH. When in doubt, whip it out.
Thanks, Jack. Well, yeah. I will say also that whether you're a private student or you're working on your commercial, you should have a commercial mindset. If you want to, if that's the end game, start thinking like a commercial pilot on day one. I started thinking about it way too late. I learned a lot later, but it would have been nice if I would have been thinking about that early on, thinking about the things that I was going to accomplish as a commercial pilot would. I think I would have been a better pilot sooner, and I got a lot to learn and a long way to go, but it's been a fun journey. As always, thanks for listening, and stay behind the prop.
Thanks for checking out the Behind the Prop podcast. Be sure to click subscribe and check us out online at behindtheprop.com. Behind the Prop is recorded in Houston, Texas. Creator and host is Bobby Doss. Co-host is Wally Mulhern. The show is for entertainment purposes only and is not meant to replace actual flight instruction. Thanks for listening, and remember, fly safe.